Hello and welcome to Holden Village. Today is July 17th, 2006. Our session today is titled Wheel of Life. Our presenter is Jeannie Olson, session number OLJ 2006-2. Let's listen in.
I'm Paul, I'm the teaching staff coordinators for the summer. I'm here for 3 weeks, and my lucky husband is here for 2.5 months. Mm-hmm. But I'm here for 3 weeks, and this is my last week, and I'm thoroughly enjoying being here. And tonight I'm going to talk about something that I think, I love to teach classes that are practical, and so I like to teach classes that you can take something with you, hopefully, and use it for the rest of your life somehow. If you take one thing out of here, I will be glad, and I will feel like it was worth doing the class. And tonight I'm doing a class on the Wheel of Life, and I decided to give it several different definitions just to kind of cover the bases so you'll know what we're doing here. And one of them is that it's an ancient meditation on modern life. So this comes from medieval times. The other definition is a teaching tool with a spiritual message dealing with the practical emotions of life. So what we're going to talk about today is emotions and the changing of emotions and the things that we go through in the life cycles of life. And the last definition I'm giving it's a medieval model of change and emotions. You need to move to the center because you're going to have to see the screen. And this is a very interactive class, so you really do have to see the screen. So again, for those of you who just came in, it's about an ancient meditation on modern life, a teaching tool with spiritual message dealing with the practical emotions of life, or a medieval model of change in emotions. And what I'm going to be showing you is in some places it said a carving that was done in the walls of a cathedral in medieval times. And of course, what we know about medieval times is that people were illiterate. And so why do we have stained glass windows? To tell the story of Jesus in each or creation and how God loves us and the stories of the Bible in the stained glass windows because people were illiterate. So what this is there are other things that had to be taught to people in that medieval time, and one is how to deal with the emotions and changes of life. And so this looks like it, however, wasn't perhaps carved in the walls, but may have been a mosaic in the walls, because you're going to see it's kind of hard to show you or to see. Now, I'm going to apologize already, which is not a good thing for a teacher to do initially, with what you're going to see. My boss and friend found this, and she copied it off of, I believe, an internet. And when she went back to find out more about it, it was gone. It simply vanished. And we have looked all over. I've asked my friends who are artists and art historians, and we've looked on the internet, we've looked in art books, we've looked in museums. We cannot find another reproduction of this. We don't know what cathedral it's from, but we do know it's from a cathedral and what I just told you. So, with that, I'm going to pull this down, and I'm sorry it's dark in here, but if you fall asleep, I'll just throw a pen at you. But hopefully it's going to be interactive enough that it's going to keep us awake, but that's why I have a few lights on, but not too many. So what you're seeing is what was carved in the center or on a wall in the cathedral. And again, for those of you who just came in, it's not a great copy of this Wheel of Life. But what I'm going to ask you to do is we're going to talk about what you see. And we're going to interpret this the way it would have been interpreted years ago as a teaching tool. So the first thing you see, when you look at is what?
Wheel.
There's a wheel. Okay. And a wheel is symbolic for what? It goes round. Thank you. There's motion. And what?
Not ending.
Okay. Symbolically, it is. It symbolizes completeness, wholeness. So the first thing you see, great, is a wheel. What else do you see about the wheel?
Six spokes.
There's six spokes?
Three.
Okay, they go through, there's either three or six, okay, which is three, obviously a very biblical number. What did you say?
There's someone holding it.
Okay, there's somebody holding it. And what do we see about the edges?
People hanging.
There's what?
People are hanging.
People, okay, let's start talking about the people. We will get to everything in this picture because, as we know, artists make, don't put something in frivolously. Everything has a meaning. So we're going to talk about everything that we see up here at some point in our discussion. So it has been brought to our attention that there are people on here. So let's start with the person on the top. And I'm so sorry you can't see the facial expressions, but I'll know enough about it to kind of tell you if you're close of what we see. So tell me what you see about that person on the top, and please speak up nice and loudly so everybody can hear it. So I see. It's a key. Okay, how do you know this?
The crown.
There's a crown.
And
is there a scepter or something?
Maybe a scepter. That's hard to see. It's either a hand or a scepter. Let's go with both. Okay, a kingly person. What else?
A robe.
A robe. Okay, so we've got kind of flowing. So what feelings do you get from that, what you've described, this kingly, robedly?
He's at the top of the wheel.
He's at the top of the
so
wheel.
Superior.
Say that again?
That's what I was going to say. He's superior.
Superior. Okay. How is life for this person?
Good.
Good. How can you tell it's good?
Well, it looks like the other three figures are aspiring. They're hanging on.
Yeah.
Aspiring to get to the top.
Okay. So tell me what else you see about that figure. Either an emotion, a feeling, or anything physical.
Seated.
Seated.
Yeah.
Okay.
It seems
seated.
The other three are grasping onto the wheel of life, whereas he's just sitting there throne.
So what feeling you get by this seated figure?
Well, I would assume it's God or Jesus with a blessing. It looks like a blessing hand, a blessing creature.
Okay. Well, I'm going to tell you it's not God or Jesus.
Okay.
But remember, we're talking about, I don't know if you got here before, this is a wheel of life and the emotions and changes of life. So it is not Jesus. And is this person, you have mentioned that the other three are clinging. What is he doing? Let's call it a he. I don't know what it is. Is he holding on to anything?
No.
Resting casually.
Resting casually. Thank you. Resting casually, totally and completely confident. Would that be a word we could use as we look at that?
Yeah.
Okay. Confident.
His face doesn't look confident, though.
No.
His face looks negative.
It does. And I think this is my rendition of this, which is not complete. But I would say, because I'm going to tell you the name of this position. The name of this position, does anyone want to guess? What would you call that? And it's an emotion. You're going to have to speak louder if you have an answer. I can hear it.
It just looks grimacing.
Say that again?
It just looks grimacing.
He does look grimacing, but I'm going to tell you he's smiling. He's on top of the world, he's a king, he's confident, so what might he be? I'm sorry?
Atlantis? No, not the Atlantic.
He's an emotion. He is happiness. He is happiness. He's on the top of his game, he's happy, he doesn't have to hold on, he's a success, and he is called happiness. Okay. Now that we've got that, and each piece we put together, then you'll understand the wheel more. So we've got happiness sitting on the top. We now are going to go to this figure. So tell me what you see about that figure.
Can I ask one more question about happiness?
Sure.
He's very small compared to the other figures.
He is, isn't he? He
He's
does look
happy.
Small. He almost looks childlike, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Or she, as the case may be. I'm not sure which it is. If we had a copy of the real mosaic, we could perhaps see that. But yes, I like that. That person is smaller. Okay. Anything else about the top one, or we'll move on to the side one? Okay, what do you know about this figure?
They're falling.
Falling. Falling.
Downhill.
Say that again?
He's going downhill.
Downhill. His head is down, or her head is down, right? What else? They're falling, head down.
Despair.
Excuse me?
Despair.
Despair. Okay, if we could see his face clearer. If you're headed downward and you're and things have changed drastically, the look would probably be despair. What else do you see?
They're hanging on with their legs and their arms.
Yeah, I mean, this isn't balancing confidently anymore, is it? It is clinging with both arms and legs. Hey, anything else?
Well, if the bottom one looks naked, so...
Well, we're not going to that one yet.
I know, but
just talk about this one.
That would imply that the one that's not white. I can't tell if
it's got one leg
or whether it's colored.
Okay, you mean about this one's, this?
Does it have a little...
Okay, the leg is at the leg and it's exposed.
Yeah, but the rest of him is dressed.
Is dressed, okay.
In red?
And in, still in red. Okay, good point. I'm glad you pointed that out. We'll talk about what the redness means later. Okay, so if you, at the top one is happiness, and this one is headed downward, clinging, and the wheel has moved. For what you need to know is this is the same person. Okay? These are not different people. This is the same person. So what has happened between here and here? The wheel has turned. Something has happened in happiness's life to change what has happened in that person's life. Something has happened and moved the wheel, and a change has happened, and this one is named, want to guess? Loss. Things were going so well, and then this happened in my life. I lost my job, my mother died, my fortune was taken away, my whatever, and life is now, I'm upside down. And is he liking this, or she? No, I really liked where I was before. Okay, so we've got happiness on the top, and we've got loss on the right side. Let's look at the figure at the bottom. Tell me what you see there.
Exposed. Vulnerable.
Vulnerable, did I hear you say that? Very vulnerable. How do you know he or she is vulnerable?
Water.
I'm sorry, did you hear that?
Close to the water.
Close to the water. Okay, in fact, his or her head, I think we're going to use a he, I think, here, is dragging in the muck of the ground.
No clothes is very
vulnerable. No clothes. Okay, there might be a little loincloth here. After all, this isn't a cathedral, so we want to be proper. So it looks like a little loincloth, but otherwise totally naked. What do you feel like when you're naked? Like you said, totally vulnerable. What else do you see about him? Anything else?
Is that a snake or is that just a loincloth?
I don't think there's a snake, but
okay.
I think this is just where his loin, right here, you mean?
Yeah.
I think that's where his loincloth is just kind of tied around him. But if you saw a snake, it might not be a bad symbol to put in there. I mean,
are his legs completely around that rung? Or
completely around that. Just, you know, he is really holding on.
Desperation.
He's somewhat more secure, you think?
I don't know. With both legs around that rung.
Yeah.
More desperate.
But then the one on the top, actually, well, around the rung, he's just, whatever he's doing,
whatever he can sure.
To hold on. Does he look very happy? You can't see very well, but if you were naked at the bottom of the wheel, holding on for dear life, what are some of the words to describe how you would feel beside vulnerable?
Desperation,
wonderful word. What else?
Miserable.
Say it again?
Miserable.
Miserable. Okay.
Insecure.
Some of you have been at the bottom of this wheel. We've all been there. How did you feel?
Sadness.
Say that again?
Depression.
Depression.
Sadness.
Sadness.
Hopeless.
Hopeless. Great words. Great words. Okay, the name of this position on the wheel is suffering. So we've gone from happiness to loss to suffering. Anybody like to be there? No, don't like to be there. All right. So let's look at the fourth figure on the far left. What's new about this figure? Remember, it's the same person.
He's got black on his clothes.
He's got black on his clothes. What do you think that black thing is? What does it look like? He's not just
a coat.
Black. He has a coat.
Or something
which
like
is
that.
What? He also has on what beside the cloak?
Red.
He still has that red robe that perhaps this one has on, right? And perhaps that one up there. So he still has the red robe. He has this black cloak. What do you think that's about? Remember, this is all symbolism.
He's moving. He's traveling.
He's traveling? Oh, I like that. He's traveling. So a traveler would have to have a cloak. What else did the cloak imply? I didn't hear that.
Covering, some kind of protection.
Okay. Another layer. You know, I work in a hospital. I'm a hospital chaplain, and so I'm not a nurse, but I see an awful lot of stuff. And we've all had cuts or scars. And when that scar or when that cut heals and we get a scar, we probably all know that scar tissue is stronger than the initial skin we had. So how interesting that this person has kind of come through suffering and now has a new layer of protection. But why is it black?
Is it black from coming up from the muck somehow?
Could be. But he doesn't really want, he has that layer of dirt on. Remember, this is in a medieval cathedral. Who wore black in medieval times? The priests. And the other people who wore black, I think that far, is when you go to a college graduation, what do all the scholars wear? Black robes. And so, does black somehow indicate perhaps a new
insight.
Wisdom, knowledge, insight,
faith?
So that's it?
Faith. Some, if it was
okay.
More of the priestly robes.
Okay. What we know is nobody else has that.
Some psychologists might suggest that there has been some kind of a death, and then there is an absorption of the lessons of that that's carried on shadow.
Okay, very good. What do you notice? What else do you notice about him?
Hands are reaching up.
His hands are reaching up. What does that mean he's doing?
Climbing.
Nobody else seems to have that motion, do they? But he's climbing, that one hand above the other. Very good. So he's on the move. He's saying, I want to move this thing. I want to move this wheel. What's he looking toward?
Yeah, his angle's different.
Okay, tell me about what you see about his feet area.
I mean, his the way he's facing, he looks like he's facing more directly. I don't know, maybe that's just my impression.
He's looking where?
It looks like he's looking more directly out than the other one.
Okay,
so I don't know.
Okay. Maybe he is.
That's my group. It's just maybe a perception thing.
They're all kind of looking toward us, but
that one's
you're
true.
Saying he looks a little bit more open. Or,
yeah.
Okay, great. What else
he looks
more
like he's pushing himself up rather than holding on.
Okay. Pushing himself up, got his feet on there and kind of going, you know. All right. What else do you notice about his feet?
Shoes.
He's wearing shoes. He's the only one, well, we don't know about this fellow in the middle, on the top, the happiness, whether he has shoes on or not, because it's kind of, the mosaics there are not distinguishable, but he's got shoes on. And what do shoes allow us to do?
Travel.
Yeah. We can do it with much more ease, comfort. So what does that symbolically tell you?
Let's go
with shoes.
Moving on.
Did I hear that?
Yeah.
Okay. What else? Anything else?
He's come up in the world.
Okay.
He's got the cloak and the shoes, which probably are costly in those days.
Perhaps.
He's moving up.
He's moving up, and he's got something to protect him to walk through. I mean, do you want to take a walk to Heart Rate without any shoes on? You know, but with shoes, we can go the route, right? And if we have hiking boots, you know, something that's really going to protect us, you know, the path's going to be even easier. Okay, so he's got shoes. All right, want to guess? We've got happiness, loss, and suffering. So who is he?
Hope.
There you go, Simon. See, I knew I needed you here. He is hope. He's hope. Okay. Before I go on with this one, I'm going to show you another one. Different cathedrals have a little bit different wheels of hope, or the wheels of life. And in this one, I want you to look a little bit closer at the hope one. And you can see, and I love the way you said there's movement, and he's climbing, and because that shows even more that he is climbing on that one. What do you see about suffering in this one?
It's almost falling off.
Yeah,
he's almost falling off.
And very thin.
Very thin. Doesn't look too healthy. And what, you know people, I know people, who as the wheel of life turns, gets to that bottom position of suffering, And what do they want to do?
Let go.
Let go. Climb off. Give up. And some people actually we know, we've had friends and relatives who have said, I cannot do this anymore. In the midst of my suffering, I just want off the wheel. And looks like he's moving in that direction, kind of looking down in that direction. I'll come back to that.
Do you think about the colors on that one?
It has no colors. It's just black and white.
It is black and white.
Yeah, just black and white. And how and why, I don't know. Okay. As we look at that one again, just kind of summarize that. You know, when you're on the top, everything is going well. You're at the top of life, king of the hill. But what this wheel is saying is that the wheel always turns. So happiness is there for what? Fleeting. We're not going to stay there long. And then the king is going to be kind of dethroned, and it's going to be on that descent. What in the psychology of this, everything, I used to run a grief recovery group for about 6 years at the hospital in our town, and every change in life, really no matter what it is first perceived as loss, and we have to grieve it. Now my husband isn't in this class today, so I will tell you this, even though he probably knows, that when I got engaged, as thrilled as I was to marry the most delightful man I could even imagine, I experienced a grief, a loss, because I knew I was never going to be Jeannie Donstead again. And I happened to like being single, and I happened to like the life I had. Now, it didn't mean that I wasn't going to something better, but I had to grieve the change and the loss of what I was giving up. And I'll never forget the day that I got a phone. I called, you know, the hospital or the lab to find out if I was pregnant or not. And I don't know why they would tell you that information over the phone, but you know, that's what I did. And I said, you know, am I pregnant or am I not? And we had just kind of made the decision to try for children. So this was real new to me. That, you know, I thought it took a year. And they said, yes, you're pregnant. I went, what? You're pregnant. I went, oh. And I got off the phone, and I kind of burst out crying. Why? Not because I wasn't thrilled that I was pregnant, but because my life was going to change forever. And I didn't know, because it was the fear of the unknown. What's this going to be like? If you want to see very well, you may have to move over here to the right, you can see there. Because that was going to change. So every change in life is first perceived as loss and must be grieved. So that person is on that downward thing. I think of the Israelites who were leaving Egypt. How happy were they that they were leaving Egypt? I mean, they had been slaves. It was awful. And then they get out, you know, pack their bags, and they're singing. They're so happy. They're playing their cymbals. Whatever they did as they left, you know, Cecil B. DeMille or whatever it is helped us visualize all that, right? And they get out in the desert, and when they find out that they don't have the food that they wish they had, what do they say?
We
never should have left Egypt, because we come out here and now we don't even have food. So what do they want to do? We should just go back to Egypt. Well, the interesting thing about the wheel is you can't go back. You look at that and go, oh, if only I, how many times do we say that? If only such and such hadn't happened, then, you know, this wheel wouldn't be turning. And so and yet, what happened to the Israelites? They had to go even deeper into the wilderness, which is what suffering is. But our tendency is to look back and say, if only I could go back. And there's no promised land. If we look at the biblically, which of course we are because this is in the cathedral, there's no promised land without the wilderness, right? What did Jesus do? Went out to the wilderness before he did his ministry. What did the Hebrews have to do? Go through the wilderness before they could get to the promised land. So the wheel turns, and the wheel turns. Okay. Now what else I want to tell you about suffering? The word suffering in Latin means, so maybe you took Latin? Your friends know this, to to allow or experience. It's not really the way we like to view suffering, is it? To allow or experience. Those of you who have looked at Buddhism at all know that the central theme of Buddhism is what? Anybody know?
Suffering.
Life is suffering. Life is suffering. Well, if they start from that premise, well, then you expect this thing to happen to you. But we as Christians and Americans, well, you know, what does it say in the Declaration of Independence? We have the right of the pursuit of happiness. And somehow we as Americans think it's somehow our God-given right to be at the top of the wheel most of the time. And yet Buddhism says life is suffering. What about the book Scott Peck wrote, Road Less Traveled? What are the first three words?
Life is
difficult. Thank you. Life is difficult. Why did that sell so many? Because no one was saying that in America. Life is difficult. Oh, now they understand me. This book's going to tell me it. My life is difficult. And no one seems to acknowledge that. And so the book became a bestseller. There was a medieval, well even the Bible says, you know, it rains on the just and the unjust. Okay, so it's going to happen. Life's going to be difficult for all of us. There was a mystic, a medieval mystic who said, suffering is the swiftest steed that gets us to understanding. And the unfortunate thing about this whole wheel is that we can't jump from loss to hope. But think how many times we try that. You know, I work in a hospital and we have an addictions unit. And so we have people who are going through drug addiction and alcohol addiction. And many times people want to just go and be hopeful without going through the suffering of looking at their at this wheel and going through the suffering of evaluating their life and why is it they're an addict. I have people in the grief recovery group that I worked at the hospital who their loved one died. Let's just say it's a spouse or a child. Those are unbelievably hard ones because they're, you know, that's the core of who we are, that our family, parents, of course, sisters, brothers, and so on. But say it's a spouse or a child. I wonder how many people I've worked with who either turn to the red pills, turn to the alcohol, turn to denial. I won't clean the closets. I won't go to the cemetery. I won't speak this person's name. And maybe I won't hurt so much. Or if I drink these two bottles of wine at night, maybe I can sleep because that's the only way I can do it is to drug myself up and not go through the grief. And the other interesting thing about what the wheel tells us is there's no way around grief and loss without going through the suffering. Suffering is work and really hard work. You all have a story. I'm a hospital chaplain. What I do all day long is listen to stories. Everyone's got one. It's a story of illness. It's a story of grief. It's a story of now I'm 86 years old and I broke my hip and they say I can't go home. They say I have to go to a nursing home. It's I now have this chronic illness and my life is going to be changed forever. Or now I've been told that I have cancer, and I don't know how this is going to change my life and if I'm even going to live. Story after story of grief, of loss, of change, of hope. And there's no way except straight through the suffering that you can go to get through that suffering except by experiencing it. And it's really hard work. I think it's interesting that one of the things that Jesus called himself was the suffering servant. You know? Suffering servant. How interesting that he took on that. And for sure, I believe, knew that wheel in his own life. Okay. On the upward swing is, I think I could use the word transformation. That's the point where things that I think you kind of talked about, that transformation that people go through as they go from suffering to hope. How about the scriptures? I lift my eyes to the hills for whence comes my help. And that person, I think, is looking up. Now, for your participation again, let's go to the middle figure. Who's the middle figure? Tell me about that figure. What do you think? What do you think? What do you see about? Let's, I think it's her. It's her.
Female.
Okay. Female.
Looks like there's a veil.
Yeah.
Of the eyes.
Oh, very good. There's something covering her eyes. What does it remind you of?
Justice.
Lady Justice. Okay. In a secular place, she may have been referred to as Lady Luck. But because this is in a cathedral, we're going to go with What does Lady Justice remind us of? What attribute does she have? I don't think I'm asking this very well, so I'm just going to tell you wisdom. Okay, she is Lady Wisdom. And in high medieval times, there were more figures of females in the church than in the dark ages of medieval times. And so these figures were used more often. So why do you think she's blindfolded? If she's Lady Wisdom, why do you think she's blindfolded?
To be impartial.
What's she doing to this wheel?
Turning.
She's turning the wheel. Okay. She's holding it and she's turning it. It's even more evident in this one that she's turning it. She's got that motion status, right, in it, which is way more evident. But again, in this one, she has sunglasses on. But it's very evident in that one too. Okay. So she's impartial. And why does she need to be impartial?
Because it probably doesn't matter who you are or how much money you have or whatever, you're still on that wheel.
All right. Everybody's on the wheel, and she's going to say, gee, Jeannie's here in happiness. I'm really going to whip that wheel around because she's been there way too long. No. She isn't distinguishing where people are in the wheel. Now, that's going to be upsetting and good. Why is it going to be upsetting?
It doesn't change.
Say again?
Like you don't care, there's no order
doesn't
to the
universe. Doesn't this God care about me, or this Lady Wisdom, and is she representing God, or whatever? So, okay. There's a distressing part of that, that, my gosh, they don't
special.
Even see where I am.
Yeah. And I'd want to be special.
Yeah.
I'd want to be special. Yeah.
Okay. Or isn't she paying attention?
You know,
Isn't
she paying attention to me?
Yeah, especially when you're on the wall.
Yeah,
it's like,
okay.
Hello.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. Where?
Also, it's nothing personal. The positive is it's nothing you did or it's nothing.
Great. Yeah, nothing personal. We're just, the wheel turns, folks. The wheel turns. Okay. Now, all right. I was never great in science, but I do know something about wheels, and so do you. What do you know about a wheel? If you went to the playground as a kid, and we all did this, and you know, and there's a thing about this side, probably a little bigger, and you jump on it, and then your parent whipped it around, right? I hated those things. I threw up. So I didn't really do them very often. I really pretty much avoided them because I get motion sickness on a swing. So I didn't do it. But if you did those, where is the place you got whipped around the most?
On
the outside, right? And if you really hated them, you knew where to go to get whipped around us, which is where?
The center.
The center. Okay. Knowing that, what we've just discussed, what does that tell you about that wheel? Are those folks on the outside getting whipped around pretty good? Okay. And what's in the center of a wheel? The spoke?
The
what? The hub. All right. What happens in the very middle of this wheel? Is there any? There's the still point. So absolutely right here in the middle of the wheel is the place that you're not getting whipped around. And the closer you get to that place, the less you're going to get whipped. Where is that? Where is that still point on her?
On her navel.
How many of you were at the Bible study this morning? We all got to see Ron Vignette's navel. You know, we try and go to each other's classes so we can build off of each other's class, and he certainly made a wonderful point this morning of showing. And what does the navel mean?
Life.
That's where we got life from our mother. And how interesting, she's a female, and the center of that is toward her belly button. All right, what about in this one? I like this one too. Where is it?
Her heart.
And what does that represent?
Love.
Yeah. Okay, given all that, what do you think the theology is in these two pictures, considering the center of the wheel? What is this artist trying to tell us?
goes back to the Buddhist stuff.
Say that again.
Well, it kind of goes back to the Buddhism of coming into the center.
And what for us, and I'm assuming that most of us here are not Buddhists, so what does it say to us as Christians?
The same. As Christians, I think it's the same message, to come into who we are and maybe what we call a soul.
Soul. Our connection to God. How many of us do centering prayer? Okay. Where we go and move into what? The presence of God, that centering place. Okay. So, given that, I think I'll take that, no?
Question before you take that off.
Sure, it's going to come back.
But I looked at that picture, the woman in the center originally. I thought she was, I interpreted more as she was trying to balance things rather than that she was effectuating the motion. And I think it's very distinct. You know, if she's impartial, life just throws stuff at you.
Okay.
But maybe it's God that's the balancing, the centering that helps us become centered and get in touch with our soul, our love, and the motion of what creates the wheel in motion is just the outside forces, maybe. But I saw her as
balancing.
Yeah, it wasn't like, I think when you're turning a wheel, it's kind of like this.
Well, like the first, like the black and white one.
Rather than holding it like this, you're trying to
Perhaps balance their lives.
Balance for these poor souls.
So then are these two giving us two different messages? Here she seems to be sorry to help kind of balance it, and here she's the reason it's moving. She's moving it. Do you think she has them both under?
On the other one.
Yes, absolutely. And yet, as it's interpreted, if this is a wheel of life and movement, so the question becomes, you know, do we move the wheel or does she move the wheel? And for sure, we want the wheel to move, especially if we're here. Don't you know some people, though, that spend more time down here than others?
Yeah.
So the question becomes, can we help the wheel move from where it is? I mean, when we're on top, we really don't want that wheel to move, right? So is it then that when we're on top and the wheel starts to move, that's when we have very little control? When the change comes right here, when we're sitting here and everything's great, and all of a sudden it starts to move, is that when the movement starts and where we really perhaps don't have as much control over what happens?
You know, I think in this one, the difference with the two trees.
Let's talk about the trees.
Okay.
There's no mistake. Oh, when ours put something in it, so why are there trees?
I think it's the vision of the New Jerusalem from Revelation.
Say more?
There's two trees on the river that flows through the city. So this is more of the picture looking at the cycle of life from all eternity. The other one, there's no trees. The poor happiness person doesn't look that stable.
Mm-hmm.
And the lady turning the thing is a lot busier.
Mm. Okay.
But this is, you know, maybe, you know, we look back from when things have all been made whole, and we'll see these different cycles and times in our life. We'll, of course, know how difficult they were or wonderful they were. But we see it in the whole picture of God's work. And the other one, you know, there's nothing, what are all those little things along the side of it? It's very, you know, it's all the complicated, uncertain, difficult to interpret parts of our lives.
Okay. Who else has an interpretation of the trees besides the Revelation one? What do trees represent?
Life.
Life, growth. Okay. And what I didn't know till I was doing all sorts of research on this is I didn't know that, you know, when trees do the most growth, we expect it to be spring and summer because the leaves come out and the, you know, the blossoms come out and the fruit comes out. But what I've been told is that trees grow most in the winter. I didn't know that. And so what is that saying about the theology of this? When do we, as human beings, do our most growth?
Through suffering.
Gee, we don't like to do that. I really love it when I'm on top and things are going well and my life is routine and it's predictable and I'm happy and things go, but I don't really learn very much then because I'm in that wonderful routine of happiness. But it's when my wheel starts to fall, I start to fall, and the wheel starts to turn, and it's usually down here. I remember when I was taking clinical pastoral education for my training, and my boss, Rick Johnson, said to me, Gee, I hope you make a lot of mistakes. And I said, why? He goes, because you don't want to. You want to do everything right the first time. But that's not where you're going to learn. I went, ooh. Well, and he was right. You know, those are the times that I learned the most. Is that true in your life?
It is true if you're willing to learn. I think that's
we're
going to
talk about that. Talk more.
I mean, I know I just have experienced so many people that have come to suffering, and that's where they stay.
And
you either have to embrace the suffering and choose to learn from it, or you can choose not to learn from it, and then you stay in suffering.
Yeah. Very good. Because that's a huge part of this. Are you going to stay down there, or are you going to say, how determined is this guy? Look, I mean, you're the one who said to me, he's climbing. He's determined. He's climbing. He's going to get out of that. That's where the enthusiasm comes. And then the suffering comes. I am not going to stay here. I am not going to stay here. I'll suffer through it. I'll learn from it. But I am not going to stay here. And that's when hope and transformation and determination and energy come in. What does enthusiasm, what does that come from? Enthusiasm, that word, in God. And we as people of faith, where do we get that? The interesting thing about this, I'm just going to take this off here for a second to show you this. Now, one of the things that you said that's just so helpful, what I love about this is that, you know, it all comes out because all of you have this wonderful wisdom to share and we get it all discussed. But in order to get from loss to hope, we have one thing that's really important to us so we don't get stuck in the wheel and just keep going without growing. And that's, we have to have faith. So when loss and hope intersect in the middle, we have faith. When we see ourselves, those change coming, whether it's on a daily basis, then it happens to us daily and it happens to us in big ways. If we are going to know that we're going to get eventually to hope, we have to have faith. We have to have the faith that yes, I won't always be in loss, I won't always be in suffering, but at some point in time, if I work my way through this, if I move toward the center, I am going to get through on the other side. And the beauty of what you said is that people can go through this wheel and keep going through this wheel and keep going through this wheel. I see this in the addictions unit. You know, this person's been addicted to alcohol, and they go through the treatment center, and they just, then they fall off the wagon, and they come and start drinking again. And, I mean, you can do that. We can all do that in different aspects. That's a, you know, that's an exaggerated example, but that happens, and we can do that. Or we can say, I learned from this, and I'm not going to just keep doing the wheel. Okay, so where happiness and suffering intersect is joy. And the example I would give of that is happiness is fleeting. So we go to the center, and what do we find in the center? We find God. And that's where we center ourselves as people of faith. And then the happiness is fleeting. But a good example, I think, is Mother Teresa. And of course, I mean, I just love this woman. But she left kind of a life of what could be pretty easy happiness. And she decided to go straight through the loss and suffering and go on the streets of Calcutta, jump into the suffering, pick up those people who were dying, take them to the places that she had arranged, feed them their soup, hold their hands, pray with them. And what did she find in life? I mean, you look at this woman. She visited the Quad Cities, and it was my privilege to go hear her speak. And you look at this little woman. She's just a teeny little thing. But you look in her eyes, and you see joy. Why? because she knew that to find joy, she had to go to the center where she found God, and she had to go to the center and serve others. When we're out here on this thing, and we're especially wanting to stay up here, it's all about me. It's all about my happiness. All about my happiness. I'm happy up here at Holden. I'm leaving Friday, and my husband is still staying, and he gets to be here for 2.5 months, and I just get to be here for 3 weeks, and that's a loss for me. But, you know, I'm not going to suffer much, but I'm going to suffer a little, I suppose. But that's not about it. What's brought me joy up here is last week there was a person that connected with me because of this Wheel of Life and said, I came up here hoping I'd find somebody who could help me with the loss of our grandchild. We are suffering. Can you help us? And we sat and talked for 2 hours. And the beauty of that relationship to me is the thing that has brought me the most joy in being here. It's my connection to God in them and my connection to them as human beings, being able to reach out to those relationships. So that's where happiness and suffering intersect in joy, loss and hope intersect in faith, and it's all found in the avenue and in the context of love. And where we find that is people of faith. That's that centering in our faith in Christ. What other responses to that?
I have a question about that.
Yeah.
It seems to me that we were moving back and forth between interpretation of the wheel mm-hmm. and what the wheel is actually teaching. For example, I mean, I don't know if you've got a couple examples of the wheel, so the happy, loss, suffering, hope is probably, and that seems very standard for the way that they would interpret the wheel. Uh-huh. Is the faith and joy a standard interpretation of what they would have done as well? Or because part of what I'm asking, Jeannie, is it seems to me that to say that we learn more through suffering, I don't know if that's a meditative thing. I think we look at the wheel and say, where are we? What am I learning here?
Absolutely.
And it may be that I learn more suffering, or maybe I learn more at hope, or something like that. But I would think that the individual, by how we intersect with the wheel ourselves.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And the interesting thing about this is, the place we're going to now, is each of us are on this wheel somewhere. Each of us are on several wheels, probably. I mean, you might be on a little one here, things are going well, but you also may be suffering the loss of something, you know, very difficult. You're on several wheels. But the beauty of this is we're all on the wheel and we all bring our own story to it. And it, I hope what one of the things that this does is it gives us compassion for each other. If I know somebody's down here in suffering, I hope that brings out my compassion for that person, my respect for where they are, if there's anything I can do sort of thing, my connection with them, my understanding or empathy. So what you bring, what we all are on the wheel someplace all the time, and we also know that each person is someplace on a wheel. And perhaps not where we are, but what does it bring us but respect for their wheel and what they're going through, and hopefully connection, because of that faith and love and joy in the middle. One of the interesting things about loss and suffering is there was a story that I came across about a researcher who was watching a butterfly come out of a cocoon. And, you know, it was breaking it open and you know, struggling to get out, right? If you've heard this story, struggling to get out. And he thought, well, you know, if I take this little scalpel and, you know, sort of help him open up this cocoon, he'll be able to get out easier. So I'm going to be helpful, says this researcher, and make this slit in the cocoon. Well, then, of course, the butterfly came out much quicker, but the butterfly couldn't fly. Why? Because the beautiful way that God designed nature is that in the struggling of trying to get out of that cocoon, he strengthened his wings or her wings. So you needed the struggle in order to have the wings that were going to be strong enough. And soon this little butterfly died because it didn't get to go through the suffering and struggle. I think one of the beauties of, we didn't talk about this yet. Why are they all in red? Why red and why are they all in red? Or why is she in the middle in red? If she's Lady Wisdom, Sophia in Hebrew, what is she saying to the folks on the wheel.
It's probably too modern a concept to make that we make our own fortune.
Oh.
But if she's in red and they're in red, there's a
now, if that's if she's Lady Fortune, but if she's Lady Wisdom, or if she is, in fact, wisdom or a god or deity figure.
Isn't red a video called purity or innocence?
A what?
Purity or innocence.
Is it? Do you know that for a fact?
I do. I don't know the time frame, but there's
Some point in time that it is.
Mary's often pictured in red and pictured the Annunciation or something.
Okay. All right. That I didn't know. What the book that I read, some of the research that I did, is all of these folks are in red of some kind, except for him and, you know, he doesn't have anything. But is her empathy, you know, why did God become a human being and walk the earth? Empathy. You know, God has gone through this journey with us, saying, I understand your journey, I'm with you. And I think part of that is that she's in the same color to say, I'm here. And I would also say that I think this talks about our theme this summer. Our theme this summer is, I am with you always. But I think one of the things that this says to me, this wheel, is, you know, I have a blindfold on, so I'm not going to keep you in suffering. It's that blindness to that. But what I'm saying with you is, I am with you no matter where you are on that wheel. I am with you always. If you're in the suffering, if you're in the loss, hope, or if you're on the top, I'm there. And what that says to me about our faith is, what are the things that we do then to center? And they're so wonderfully easy to do up here at Holden. What do we do to get to the center, to the still point, that keeps us from being flung out and on the wheel in such a dramatic way, that centrifugal force? What do we do to get centered? Help.
Pray.
What else?
Worship.
Meditate.
Walk in nature.
What else?
Rest.
Say that again?
Rest.
Okay. Whether we're resting physically or resting in the spirit. Okay, what else? What do we have up here a mile away?
Labyrinth.
Walking the labyrinth. Being princes. I talked to a couple of people who said they do centering prayer. Being in community. Sharing. Being empathy and having empathy with one another. Okay, so those are the things we do to move off the edge and into the center, where hopefully we will find less flung about in this wheel of life. Anything else that you see or want to share, or even where you feel like you might be on this wheel? Now, that's a pretty personal thing. If you don't want to share that, you don't have to. But anything else that you've observed or in any way that speaks to you? Yeah.
It's my sense that in our modern American culture that we really, like you mentioned before, believe we have a right to be at the top. And more, it seems like people really refuse to be down. And so we medicate, self-medicate, pharmacologically medicate. Lows are just simply not acceptable. Pain is not acceptable. Suffering is not acceptable. And it should all be treated, and we should all be at the top.
All the time.
And I wonder about the lessons that aren't learned and the wisdom that isn't gained in our culture, because we will not accept the bottom of the wheel as a place to be. In our culture, I think it's not a positive thing about our culture that we can't do suffering anymore without trying to medicate ourselves out of it.
We're Americans, after all. We're supposed to get it all right, you know.
Well,
kind of neat and tidy.
And verbally, when you say you're trying to help people, you know, it's like, buck up, you can do, you know, instead of allowing some of that time for them to get through that, to get to the next level, it's like you're not allowed to.
Yeah.
Buck it up, you know, move on, you can do it, other people have. Yeah. So I think there has to be some allowance
of that. Sure.
I think we also raise our children not to want to be more suffering. I'm an elementary school principal, so all of this sort of comes to me
your
way. The elementary school principal.
Okay.
And I think it two sort of specifics, but I mean, one is very, very specific. What they're learning about ADHD right now probably has an awful lot to do with the way we're treating children and putting them in carriers that doesn't allow them to move. Because what we're learning is that they have never learned to get a direct, centered sort of sense of who they are, and I mean, bodily, just direct. And so there is this constant movement because the centering didn't take place when it was supposed to. And that's because we're not holding our children anymore. We're carrying them around in these little carriers all the time.
That's interesting.
And we are doing this because we want to protect them. And it's the same kind of thing. We're not allowing them the suffering in that kind of sense. So that, right, so that they can actually grow and become who they're meant to be. But so I think of that too, and I think parents are so into providing so many activities and so many, and even schools. I mean, I think about the whole middle school concept of doing all of these wonderful assemblies where you praise the kids for everything that they're doing so that you never get to that point where you finally say, you know, you're going to fall sometime, and I'm going to be there for you when you fall. And fall is okay, because I will be there.
Yes, I will be there, which is exactly what Jesus says.
Exactly.
God says, thank you. Anything else we have?
I think we often think in terms of major life events when we look at something like this, the death of a spouse or a child or major loss. But I posit that every day we go through these.
Absolutely.
Especially three, four, five times a day. Yeah, yeah. Even if you don't have a lot of mood swings, I mean, it's how we talk to ourselves. It's the attitude, the approach we have to life. We can be in any one of those and be flinging ourselves around with
it. Can happen in the first hour of the day.
Yeah.
Oh,
she doesn't like me.
Really great.
He said this because of that, and we're immediately suffering now.
Yeah.
They don't like me, you know. And then, well, maybe they like me. She smiled at me. I mean, all this stuff we say and the story we tell ourselves.
Absolutely. Thank you. Yeah.
Oh, no, I just think the contrast between the happiness of the joy that's in the center. That even if all that stuff's going around, you're going, if you can find that Christ in you, that center, you can stay closer to the middle of that wheel, which is where I'd rather be.
But we know people that simply don't seem to learn by the wheel going around and around, so they can't ever draw closer, or they don't have the faith that helps them through that. Yeah.
But I also think that something that I think he was kind of referring to is that you can also see people who tend to gravitate or their persona tends to reflect a certain position here. One of the most creative people I have ever met, who was a long-term staff person here for a while, her husband characterized her as having the charism of grief and eventually use of antidepressants enabled her to be freed enough of that to become extraordinarily prolific as a writer and a wonderful, caring person, but she just lived with a lot of suffering in her life. I know another man who nearly lost his son to cancer, and yet this was the most cheerful man I had ever met, and it kind of drove me nuts. And the thing is, he could talk about how unhappy he was about his son and all these sorts of things, and yet this is a person who radiated that God is good.
So he had the joy rather than the happiness.
Well, I think that he was pretty related. I think life was happy for him. I mean, he had this event. I tell you about it to say that it wasn't superficial.
Right.
It was real. But he was a person who's pretty much, I never knew him unhappy. So I guess what I'm saying is that I don't think we also should presume that everybody is just going to go through this in the same kind of way.
Oh,
that
absolutely.
We tend to gravitate.
Right.
Each
had
our personas,
wheel.
And
yes.
Now we need to let each other be in those places.
Absolutely. Beautifully put.
And not only around the outside, but I think, I didn't ask it to you very well before, is the faith joy thing part of the teaching of the wheel? The faith joy?
You know, I think so, but I'm not going to be able to answer that.
Because there's
too much we don't know. I mean, did those monks write those things down to those priests?
Well,
no, sure,
be that Mother Teresa is probably much closer to the center of hub, so she can endure the suffering, the hardship within a smaller cycle of God. But on the other hand, I think it's as presumptuous to say the center of the wheel is better than the outside than it is any one place around it, because people experience things differently. And I think happiness is not joy.
Happiness is not joy.
It's a good human thing to experience, as suffering is a learning thing to experience. experience. So I think we can be outside the wheel sometimes, and we learn there, and then we're at the center, we learn there.
What we want to make sure is that we do have that transformation and change and growth, and we're not just repeating ourselves over and over again.
I did read something about Mother Teresa and how, you know, we're always wondering at this point at the bottom, why? And
why?
There was a point in her life where she did do those kinds of why,
yes.
But it always came back to that center, you know. She brought it back to God. But she did sit in her little
corner. She did. Just
corner.
Because she's Mother Teresa
right.
Didn't mean she didn't go through the
because
wheel.
That made, you know, another point where, okay, I can relate because here's this person that we revere and respect who did do some of the same thing that the rest of us would
do. The rest of us. She is human. All right, I believe I'm ending on time. If there's any other discussion or any of you want to discuss this any time during the week, I will be glad to have that discussion. Thank you so much for coming, and God bless you on your journeys through the wheel.
Thank you.